Hi guys, thank you for joining me. My name is Eliza Fisherman, and this is Tethered. There is no doubt that although many people lied, most did so sincerely, convinced that they were telling the truth. Mikhail Zygar, The Empire Must Die. Chapter 1. The buildings of Helena's financial district are black with rain. Their heavy forms bow inwards, looming over the badly lit streets below. Despite the rain, the office workers, a washed-out crowd of brown and gray, shuffle out of revolving glass doors. They join the indistinguishable mass of people pouring into the underground, where they split apart to respective branches of the metro line and flood the station with their terse silence. High up in the gargantuan cement office building with the words Clearwater Shipping stamped straight and strict over the revolving doors are three windows glowing a cheery orange, pressing against the imposition of the night. Beyond the farthest window, Ivan Clearwater sits at a sturdy oak desk, the rhythmic scrape of his pen on the pages of a shipping ledger filling the room. His handwriting is as sharp as Ivan himself. The angry incline and elegant loops seem perfectly natural coming from a man of his stature, with his narrow waist and angular shoulders, his cropped blonde hair accentuating the gaunt slant of his jawline and cheekbones. There's a soft knock on the door of Ivan's office. He lifts his black eyes from the shipping ledger and straightens, replacing the cap on his fountain pen. The pads of his fingers glow white, move in a swift gesture, and there, connecting his fingertips, is a shimmering white web, a spell. He throws the spell, dart-like, at the door. It sinks into the metal lock. The bolt clicks. "It's open," he says. "Mr. Clearwater?" "Come in, Clementine." Ivan glances at the clock above his desk. It's after 9. His assistant should have long been home by now. The young woman walks in, tugging on the sleeves of her hopelessly optimistic yellow sweater. "I just got a call from the North Port," she says, tucking a strand of orange hair behind her ear. "They told me Mr. Moore still hasn't signed the contract they sent him, and they won't be able to ship his containers without it."
"Did you ask when they can fit his cargo in next?"
"Not for another week and a half," she says. Ivan purses his lips.
"He's had the document for almost a month. It's hardly a complex contract."
"I called Stacy," says Clementine, "Mr. Moore's secretary. She said she'd given him all the paperwork and followed up with him multiple times, but it's his wife's birthday today, and apparently he's been a bit distracted."
"Well," says Ivan, waving a dismissive hand and returning to the document in front of him, "it looks like his cargo will be remaining in the North Port."
"With what the portmaster is going to charge us for storage per container per day? I ran the numbers." She steps forward, placing a printout on Ivan's desk. "If the cargo isn't loaded onto the barge in the next 2 hours, we'll lose almost as much as we're making on this deal." Ivan glances down at the printout, rubbing his temples.
"Unless Mr. Moore feels like leaving his party, not much can be done. I'll try calling the portmaster, but I don't see what good it would do us. He won't load the containers onto the barge without the right paperwork in place, and rightfully so. I wouldn't take such a risk if I were him either."
"Right, but I have a solution," Clementine says, a blinding smile flashing across her face.
"Go on."
"So, Stacy spoke to Mr. Moore, see? He apologized profusely and invited you to stop by his wife's party."
"Absolutely not."
"It's not like anyone will think you're there to have fun when you show up with a contract. If you leave now, there's just enough time to get his signature and still get the containers onto the barge."
"Does Mr. Moore think I have nothing better to do?"
"I know it's super inconvenient, but..."
She looks pointedly at the printout on Ivan's desk.
"I'd do it myself, but I'm a secretary. They won't even let me through the front door. You, on the other hand..."
"You underestimate my reputation. You are far more likely than I to get through the door."
"This
is Clearwater Shipping, she informs him, blue eyes narrowing. You are Ivan Clearwater. You have to go. Ivan opens his mouth to say no, and Clementine's face falls. Sighing, Ivan looks over the printout again. And these bullying tactics, he thinks, from the same girl who only a few months ago couldn't be encouraged, cajoled, or even pressured into voicing an opinion. How quickly people find their voice when they're given the opportunity to use it. If Ivan refuses the plan, Clementine's work will be for naught, and this sudden spark of confidence, so long and carefully cultivated by Ivan himself, will die. To let it all go to waste at this final stretch, over what? A few minutes of discomfort? Very well, he says, pushing aside the printout and closing his shipping ledger. Get me a copy of Mr. Moore's contract, and give Greg the address.
Yes, Mr. Clearwater, Clementine says, practically prancing from the room.
Ivan waits for the door to close behind her, then rises from his desk. At first glance, both Ivan and his office are exemplars of modesty. The simple wooden desks with its three ordinary chairs, the bookshelves lining the walls, stacked with ledgers and files, the wardrobe with its mirror. Closer examination, however, reveals a subtle superiority in the precision with which the space is set up. Every item is placed just so, staged to appear well-used and loved, except the resulting effect is more that of a storefront or a theatrical set, uniform, measured, and uninviting. After the revolution, Ivan removed the gold ornamentation from his father's furniture himself, sanded down the lacquer, the signatures of artisans, marred the leather, and still the hands of the craftsmen are distinct, visible in the subtle design of the sloping arms of his chairs, the rounded curves of the table's edges, twisting where the eye expects sharp angles, the bookshelves' seamless joints, all held together without a single nail, because their alignment is so perfect, so precise, that gravity and pressure alone are enough to keep them from falling apart. Once done with the furniture, he'd performed the same amputation on his wardrobe, unpicked embroidery from jackets, removed lace from shirts, replaced gaudy buttons of silver and gold, of colorful gemstones with simple studs of black or white. Even without the embellishments, the richness of the cloth and the clean lines of the silhouettes are impossible to hide. But wear and the passing of days are there to help wash away the luxuries of the past, and to help him forget. Help Ivan stop missing the once commonplace, elaborate dinners, glittering balls, and witty, highbrow conversations. He lets himself be lulled by the hypnotic rhythm of the day by day by day, and lets it lead his unresisting body in the silent, lonely march towards death. As a final concession to conformity, Ivan had cut off his hair, thick blonde locks falling in curls about him as he shaved it down nearly to his scalp, but the buzz cut only served to reveal his sharp jawline and sunken cheeks. Gone was the softness and delicacy his long hair provided. He became stonework, carved almost to exaggeration, lithe and angular. To this day, no matter how intently Ivan aims for indistinguishable, he achieves peculiar at best. In his defense, few of his countrymen get it right. Conformity, the idea, being far easier to adopt than conformity, the practice. Going to the wooden wardrobe in the corner of the room, Ivan looks himself over in the full-length mirror, running his palms down the wrinkles in his white shirt. It had been his father's, at the peak of fashion when it was bought over a decade ago with its high collar and newer small black buttons. Now, though, it's gotten soft with wear, painfully out of date. Good enough for the office, not so much for a party thrown by a parliamentary. Ivan's fingers glow white with magic, and he pushes it into the fabric of his shirt, running shimmering silver strands through the material until the wrinkles smooth out. The shirt's old enough as it is, if he shows up wrinkled. Ivan cringes at the idea of being seen in it, at what, no doubt, will be a terribly glamorous event. There's no choice. He doesn't have the time to go home and change. And even if he did, He hardly has anything more appropriate in his wardrobe. Removing his brown suit jacket from its hanger, he slips it on. It's just as bad as the shirt, hinting of outdated luxury. He buttons the jacket closed, runs a hand over his blonde buzz cut, presses his fingers into the line starting to form around his black eyes, then steps back, taking himself in once more. It's fine. He looks fine. Maybe even handsome. He knows he should be more excited about this opportunity. If he makes the right moves, says the right things, this might be his chance to re-enter society. Instead, he wants to call Clementine back into his office and inform her that he is absolutely not going, that Mr. Moore will have to deal with the consequences of his absent-mindedness himself. But Ivan is no longer a child. He doesn't get to avoid unpleasantness with the stomp of his foot. Clementine barrels back into the room without knocking. "Oh," she says, stopping to smile at Ivan. "That jacket looks very handsome on you." Ivan has the sudden urge to rip the jacket off and go in his shirt sleeves. "That's kind of you, Clementine," he says instead, turning to face her. "Here's the contract," Clementine hands him a manila folder, "and Greg's already pulled the car up for you."
"Thank you," Ivan says, inclining his head.
Clementine moves to leave, then hesitates at the door, perfectly manicured fingernails tapping on the doorframe. "You know," she says without looking at Ivan, "you don't need to go all the way to the North Port yourself. I'm sure Greg can deliver the paperwork to the portmaster. You could, stay. Enjoy the party. Maybe, you know, meet someone." The sleeve of her yellow sweater slips down, exposing the thin black band of her tether mark encircling her wrist, smothering her magic.
He lets his gaze slip away from the tether. What the government forces people to do with their magic is no concern of his. "I assure you," he says, "romance and parties are just about the last thing on my list of interests."
Clementine stops again, then, still not looking at Ivan, says, "You're not at all like they say you are. You deserve to be happy, too."
"I am happy," Ivan says gently. "This company, our team, you all make me very happy."
"It's not the same."
"It's enough."
Clementine looks like she wants to say more, then changes her mind. She gives him a sharp nod and exits the room. Ivan shrugs on his thick brown coat and pulls on a mask of cool serenity. 5 minutes at this party, and he'll have saved his company thousands of marks. He probably won't even be noticed, everyone too happy and drunk to pay him any mind. In and out, that's all. How bad can it be? Ivan steps out onto the street, the city of Helena rising up around him, and locates his car. Greg, his driver, a soft, round man in his late 40s, is waiting for him at the entrance of Clearwater Shipping, besides the black vehicle Ivan's parents, Boris and Anastasia, had left him before they were exiled from the Northern Union. It's perfectly polished and glittering in the moonlight. It, at least, looks appropriate for the event. One less thing to be embarrassed about, he thinks with relief, as his driver opens his door for him and he slips inside with a soft, "Thank you, Greg."
"Clementine gave me the address," the man says, getting into his car.
He places his hands on the steering wheel, his palms glow green with his tethered magic. It sinks into the car, down through the metallic frame and into the engine, starting it. Ivan rests his head on the window, stares up at Clearwater Shipping, at the three lights still on the top floor. The furthest one switches off, then a second later so do the other two. Clementine is going home. Good. He should be more mindful of her working hours. He may no longer own Clearwater Shipping, what with every company in the country having been nationalized after the revolution. But this doesn't mean the bone-deep awareness of his responsibility for it and its employees is gone. His modest government stipend, which barely keeps him clothed and fed, has not washed away the knee-jerk response of ownership. Clementine and the rest of the staff, though assigned to Clearwater Shipping by the Department of Vocation, have become as cherished and valuable to him as they'd be if he'd have hired them himself. The only person Ivan brought out with him from the before was Greg, and even then, it was only due to a hefty bribe he'd paid the Department of Vocation, allowing him to keep the man on as his chauffeur. As they pull away from the towering cement monstrosity that houses Clearwater Shipping and onto the streets of Helena, Ivan leans back in his seat and closes his eyes. Signing the documents will take 5 minutes. In and out, he reminds himself. Easy. A man in a red velvet uniform opens the car door for Ivan when they pull up to the brightly lit apartment building.
"Mr. Clearwater," he says with a bow. "They're expecting you. Top floor, apartment 7.
Ivan glances up at the building. 8 stories, an apartment per floor, it would seem. He knows, of course, that Mr. Moore is an interpreter, and as such, a prominent member of the Prime Minister's cabinet. Though what it is interpreters do for the Prime Minister is anyone's guess. The ins and outs of the profession are a tightly kept secret, revealed only to the man himself on the day of his election. One thing is certain, though. Whatever it is they interpret for him, it is definitely not language. Powerful or not, this level of luxury is practically unheard of nowadays, what with most of the city's private estates and apartments having been confiscated from proven or suspected revolutionaries, nationalized, and turned into communal housing. The bedrooms divvied up, 1 bedroom per family, in place of an apartment, forcing everyone residing in a single unit to share the kitchen and bathroom. These days, if anyone wants an entire floor in an apartment building of this stature, they must neatly pack up their morality and bribe and curry favor with their head high and chest out. Moreover, they must be liked if they are to feel safe enough to display their luxury like this by throwing something as frivolous as a birthday party. Of course, Moore is liked. Ivan's own staff jumps to attention the moment the man enters Clearwater Shipping's doors. Even Clementine hovers with the wide-eyed dedication of a schoolgirl hanging on her favorite professor's every word. Ivan walks through the elegant foyer and steps into the elevator, where the elevator operator welcomes him with a bright smile. The man takes hold of the elevator lever, palm glowing momentarily green, and pushes it all the way up. Ivan's stomach flips as they rise. He directs Ivan to the large double doors at the end of the hall, and he strides over to them, manila file held loosely under his arm. He knocks and waits, pulse starting to rise at the sound of music and merriment coming through the door. It flies open. A young woman Ivan doesn't recognize sways in the doorway, grinning at him. She's barefoot, wearing a black velvet gown, champagne glass tipping precariously between her thin fingers, black tether mark accentuated by not one, but 2 bands of diamonds encircling her wrist. Whomever she is certainly not Mrs. Moore. She gives Ivan a once-over and snorts. "Oh, darling," she draws, amusement clear in her voice. "You're at the wrong door. The staff entrance is around the back."
"I'm a guest, I assure you,"
says Ivan coolly, and then, because he just can't help but be petty, adds,
"Your dress is gorgeous. A Pascal, isn't it? I remember seeing it in his collection, what is it now, 3 years ago?"
The young woman's mouth drops open. "I only bought it the day before yesterday," she exclaims.
"Really?" asks Ivan, raising his eyebrows in feigned surprise.
He leans in and peers closely at the woman's dress.
"I wouldn't tell anyone that. They'll assume you're wearing a cheap knockoff."
With that, Ivan steps around her and into the white entrance hall with its lacquered wardrobes, floor-to-ceiling mirrors, and gold-framed paintings hanging on the walls in a shameless display of wealth. By the door is a seemingly endless procession of parade shoes. Dozens and dozens of pairs stand together, spreading from the door in consecutive circles. Ballet flats and heels, boots and slippers, moccasins and stilettos, Oxfords, derbies, loafers, and even a pair of bejeweled sandals, all shiny and well-kept, some of them looking brand new, no doubt purchased just for this evening's event. The variety and luxury of the shoes makes his head spin. What must it be like to live in today's world and still be able to afford brand new party shoes?
Ivan weaves his way through them, removing his coat as he goes, and hangs it in the wardrobe among all the others. The secret to these kinds of events, he knows, is acting like it's a matter of course he be here. That he was not simply invited or welcomed, but wanted and adored. And the only way to do so is to act comfortable. So he sits down on one of the white silk chaises and unlaces his black leather shoes, standing them neatly beside a man's suede moccasins. He ignores how old and worn his look by comparison. There's nothing that can be done about it now. A door at the end of the hall opens, flooding it with music and laughter as three men and a woman walk out. "And then she said," says the man in a black tuxedo and bright red socks, "Bernard, honey, what you're asking for is simply impossible." The group bursts into laughter. "Impossible," the man continues with a guffaw. "For me, can you imagine?" Behind him, the young woman who opened the front door scrutinizes her dress in one of the mirrors. "Serves her right," Ivan thinks, striding past the group into the wide living room. Hundreds of golden pinpricks of light float through the air, bathing the room in a warm golden glow. Ivan catches one of the sparks between thumb and forefinger. It stops shining at his touch. He rubs his fingers together, and the spark disintegrates into a soft golden powder. Magic, he realizes. He's never seen anything like it. Didn't even know something of the sort was possible. As he looks around the room, he notices the guests' faces have streaks of gold, probably where the little lights have brushed against their skin. At the far end of the room, backed by floor-to-ceiling windows, a band plays a funky jazz riff. The singer, a stunning brunette in a red gown, leans forward, arms spreading as though addressing the gathered guests in their spectacular evening wear of red, white, and black, as they dance, socked or barefoot, laughing and uninhibited on the red hand-woven rugs lining the parquet floor. In the days before the revolution, lavish parties were commonplace, so much so that Ivan had a whole fleet of suits tailored just for such occasions. Doors would fly open before he'd even exited his car, the hosts overjoyed to see him, eager to welcome him to their events. Ivan exhales sharply, stomping down the rush of longing before it overwhelms him. A hand lands on his shoulder, and he nearly jumps out of his skin.
"Mr. Clearwater, thank you so much for coming."
Ivan smooths his feature and turns.
"Mr. Moore," he says, inclining his head, "quite the event you've got here."
He smiles, trying to make himself more palatable.
"I can see how paperwork would have slipped your mind."
Mr. Moore gives a small laugh, his black eyes lighting up with mirth. His thick, dark hair, normally slicked back during working hours, falls in waves around his ears, softening his stoic demeanor.
"Yes, well, I'm more a reserved man myself, but my wife has very high standards, and she expected a surprise."
Ivan grins at him.
"Hardly a surprise if she expects it." "Those are the rules of my life," Moore says with a shrug,
leading Ivan around the dancing people and through a door off to the side of the room.
"My office," he says by way of explanation,
as though Ivan can't tell, what with the bookshelves and enormous mahogany desk.
"My Lydia tells me exactly what she wants, and I provide it. Then she is delightfully surprised, and I get to live in peace a few more weeks." "What happens if you don't pick up on her hints?" "Oh, nothing too serious. A little torture, some frets of decapitation."
Ivan laughs, unused to this relaxed, chatty side of Mr. Moore, who during business hours is nice enough, if rather reserved. His mode of operation isn't particularly showy. He does things simply, cleanly, without pomp or fanfare, keeping their meetings brief and to the point. Mr. Moore looks at Ivan expectantly, and he realizes the man is waiting for him to recount an anecdote of his own. The rules of polite conversation have slipped his mind. All his jokes, all his zest for life, are locked in the before the revolution. It obviously takes him too long to think of something to say, because Mr. Moore clears his throat uncomfortably and gestures to the folder.
"The contract?" he says.
"Yes," Ivan replies, back on familiar ground. Where is his impeccable upbringing now, he wonders, as he opens the folder and lays out the paperwork in front of Mr. Moore. Foolish. He should have said something funny, charming, something that would make Mr. Moore like him, consider inviting him to his and his wife's next party for the pleasure of his company rather than urgent business. Mr. Moore uncaps his pen, pushes back his sleeves, his black tether mark flashing briefly into view as he signs the document. Ivan can't help but wonder how this man got assigned the job of interpreter. He must have distinguished himself during the revolution. Ivan bends over the table, puts his own signature on the paperwork, and the next moment, Mr. Moore is leading Ivan back out of the study.
You should stay, he says, glancing at Ivan. Enjoy the party. It's the least I can do, considering the inconvenience. My assistant said you have a driver. I'm sure he can get the paperwork to the port without you.
Ivan opens his mouth to decline, then pauses. It's an olive branch of sorts, the first of its kind in a decade. Maybe he can take it. Maybe just for tonight, he can pretend he is part of society again, welcome among people. No one recognized him when he walked in. No one even spared him a second glance. Maybe the public has forgotten his face, or maybe it's simply moved on with far more important concerns than the likes of Ivan Clearwater.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. That sounds lovely. Tonight, it's Reynold,
Mr. Moore says, extending a hand for him to shake.
Ivan, he responds, clasping it in his own and offering the man a dazzling smile.
Mr. Moore smiles back, face taking on a pleasant look of surprise. Reynolds recognized him, seen him, not as an outsider, but as one of his own kind. And abruptly, something softens, a bridge unfolds, and Ivan is welcomed. Mr. Moore beckons over a young woman serving cocktails to the guests.
An exchange, Florence, he says with a grin, lifting the last two drinks from her tray and handing one to Ivan. I shall take your two remaining cocktails, and you will take this folder to Mr. Clearwater's driver. He should be parked downstairs.
He drops the envelope onto her tray.
Ask him to deliver it to the North Port's portmaster.
Yes, Mr. Moore, she says with a curtsy, hurrying away.
To a long and prosperous partnership, Reynold says, extending his glass to Ivan.
He returns the sentiment, clinking his own glass against the man's.
Reynold, darling,
Ivan turns to see Mrs. Moore approaching them. Do you think we should bring out the... She stops, taking in Ivan in his simple brown suit.
I see you've asked Mr. Clearwater to stay. Marvelous.
Mrs. Moore, thank you for the...
So happy to have you.
Mrs. Moore cuts him off, beaming, as she takes her husband under the arm and starts dragging him away.
I need him for just a second. I'm sure you don't mind.
And then they're gone, disappearing into the dancing throng, leaving Ivan entirely alone.
He sighs, looking over the crowd. It's okay. He can do this. After all, he can't expect Reynold to keep him company all night, can he?
Someone crashes into him, spilling a cocktail over his trousers and socks, the cold liquid seeping sticky and wet between his toes.
Sorry, says a soft voice.
He looks up, ready to give the drunk a severe talking to, and freezes. It's Aaron Page, his old schoolmate and rival, and decidedly the last person Ivan wanted to see here tonight. See anywhere, ever. Page looks exactly like he had when they'd studied together at Wentworth Academy, tall, nearly as tall as Ivan himself, slim and dark-haired, though there's significantly more gray in his hair now.
Clearwater,
Aaron says, grinning, his blue eyes sparkling with a drunken sheen. What are you doing out in public? Shouldn't you be hiding in a hole somewhere?
Shouldn't you be canoodling with your adoring fans? He snaps back, instinctively stepping away from the man.
Then he remembers that he has no need to fear him, at least not tonight. In this room, Paige is not a crime prevention officer on duty, just a drunk idiot who doesn't know how to keep his wine in his glass.
They can wait, Paige says with a leer. Are you here with someone?
He looks around curiously, peering into the faces of a group of people chatting nearby.
Moore and I have mutual interests, Ivan draws, then curses himself for it.
Did he just invite an investigation into Clearwater shipping? Is this run-in enough to remind Paige of Ivan's existence and bring the heavy eye of the Department of Crime Prevention back onto him?
Yes, I've heard. How does it feel as a revolutionary, scurrying about doing the bidding of the parliament?
Revolutionaries don't exist anymore, Ivan hisses. You've made sure of that.
And yet, Paige says coolly, here you are.
Don't worry, Ivan says. I was just leaving.
Smart, cowardly, and slippery. Paige looks pointedly at Ivan's wet feet. But never not smart. His white teeth flash, and Ivan has the distinct impression he's standing in front of a predator.
Someone clearly raised you well, Ivan says with an amused smile.
Oh, wait. Everyone fawns over you so much, I nearly forgot you're technically an orphan.
At least my parents weren't exiled from the country for crimes committed against the people.
Paige snaps back. His words sting, all the more because they are true. This is exactly how it always goes between the two of them. Paige says something derogatory about Ivan's parents. Ivan replies with something equally hurtful about Paige's adoptive family. And instead of a neutral conversation, they're back to their old childish taunting. But that is not how this conversation needs to go. Ivan doesn't need to give in to petty childhood rivalries. He's an adult now. This fight is long over. Dead. It died the instant the White Party was thrown out of the parliament. Aaron Paige is the winner, and Ivan the loser. And Ivan best remember the parades held in Paige's honor, the cheering, the fangirls, and Ivan's own silent, horrifically lucky, slither into obscurity. At least he was permitted to slither away, while the rest of the White Party was rounded up, exiled, and imprisoned, or executed. Keeping his and Aaron's current social positions firmly in mind is safer for Ivan than pretending they're still at Wentworth Academy, where Ivan, brilliant, rich, and popular, was at the very least Paige's equal, and in the eyes of some, even his superior. He turns his back to Paige and mechanically draws on his magic. The warmth of it thrums through his veins, calming him. His palm glows white, and he's about to push a spell down to dry his socks when Paige reaches around him and grabs Ivan by the wrist.
Are you insane? Paige hisses into Ivan's ear, fingers pressing forcefully into his flesh. You can't use untethered magic here.
Ivan's link to his magic snaps. Going absolutely still, Ivan's eyes dart around the room, but no one's paying them any mind.
What can he say? That he was so aggravated by Paige's presence, he'd completely lost control of himself? Come on, says Paige. The bathroom's this way.
Without releasing his hand, Paige drags Ivan through the room, back into the entryway.
There will never come a day when using your kind of magic publicly will be okay, he snaps as he opens the bathroom door, flipping up the little gold light switch. Do you understand me? Are you going to arrest me? Ivan asks. You're barking mad. You shouldn't be here. Wash up and leave.
Paige pushes Ivan into the bathroom, shutting the door behind him. Ivan walks over to the sink and turns on the cold water. He rolls back his sleeves, revealing the angry red scar encircling his right wrist, following the exact line of a tether mark. Ivan closes his eyes to the sight of it. As he pushes his hands under the stream, he realizes that they're shaking. He should be grateful, he supposes. If it weren't for Paige's quick reflexes, who knows who would have noticed the white of Ivan's magic. Paige is right. Ivan shouldn't be here. What a stupid mistake. Shaking his head, Ivan dries his hands on one of the soft white towels, adjusts his sleeves, and slips out of the bathroom. The entrance hall is empty. Paige must have rejoined the party. He glances longingly in the direction of the living room doors. Joyous laughter can be heard through them, and Ivan closes his eyes to the sound. It's not as though he wants to be here, he reminds himself, as he picks his shoes out of the procession. How frustrating that he'd sent Greg to the North Port, he muses, lacing up his shoes. Never mind. He can take the metro back to the office and wait for him there. He hadn't finished going over the ledger when he'd left anyway. Ivan pulls on his coat, buttoning it closed, and works a far better use of his valuable time than some lame party. Regardless, it's his own fault. No one made him choose the losing side during the revolution. He joined it all on his own. And now he gets to live with the consequences of his choices.
At least I get to live, he thinks ruefully as he exits the apartment. Unlike everybody else.
That is the end of chapter 1 of Tethered. Thank you for joining me. Please come back next week for the second chapter. Hope you enjoyed. Bye.